I am, I'm very interested in hearing what you think about this album, because I have been all over the place.
I've been waiting to talk about it. Like, I'm just chomping at the bit to say some things.
I love this song.
This song is awesome. Song is.
I don't think I'll ever cool on it.
I mean, I think that's the deal, you know?
You know, it's weird because I'm going to pull their Wikipedia page up.
Getting better all the time. There's nothing you and I won't do.
I'll stop the world and help with you. It peaked at 76 on the Hot 100. Isn't that low?
Well, it is low, and especially considering another piece of trivia that I know. And that I don't know if I should repeat right now.
Why?
Well, I think we should wait for the song to finish.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's so good, and like the Bowling for Soup cover is really good.
Jason Mraz cover, not so great.
I don't know if I've heard that one.
He reggae's it pretty hard.
Ooh.
So it has gotten to the point, and we're going to get into this more. We're talking about the guys that sing I Melt With You, Modern English. It's gotten to the point where there are covers on YouTube of the covers of the song.
Right.
Like, a handful of, like, really young girls, like 10 to 13-year-old girls on acoustic guitar ukulele covering the Jason Mraz version. So that shows, A, the ubiquity of I'm Out With You, and B, Jason Mraz's current demographic. And there you have it. That is let's check the year. 1982 single, I Melt With You, by the band Modern English, on the album After the Snow. You were listening to episode 3 of One Hit Wonderful World. My name is Cody Nelson. I'm sitting across from
Kyle Kimblin,
my close friend and roommate and co-host of this podcast. This is One Hit Wonderful World, the show where each week we talk about a one-hit wonder artist. An artist that's classified with that title. This week, it's the guys that sing I Melt With You, Modern English. So what we're going to do today is talk about the song, talk about why it got them big, how big it got them, what it meant for the band at large. But mostly on the show, we
I
like to focus...
Most importantly. We listen to the album that they did after the album that the hit is on.
Yes. To check the progression, see where they went from there, see if maybe... they deserved a better shot in the spotlight, or maybe some longer-lasting fame. So we're just giving a little more attention to these artists that I think got looked at for a brief time for one thing. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah.
And so to do that, we implore all of you at home listening to this. Listen to the album. It's called Ricochet Days. It's by the band Modern English. It was released in 1984. And yeah, you'll appreciate this podcast a little bit greater because we're going to go into depth about that record and talk about what we thought on of it. What did you think of it? Do you want to just, like, before we dive in?
Well, okay, so Ricochet Days, that's the album after the Snow,
yes,
by Modern English, which has the hit I Melt With You, which is an awesome song.
It's a great song.
That song is so catchy and so, like, it feels so good, and it's a great song.
Well, I mainly brought up the fact that it peaked at 78 on the Hot 100, feeling low, because doesn't everyone seem to know this song? 78 seems low for a song that feels so ubiquitous.
Right, right. Like, it wasn't, like, number in the top 10.
Yeah, or even, like, I'd say, I guess 20 is probably when things start to get real known.
Now, here's my thing. So, on Ricochet Days, this album that we've both listened to,
which does not have a Wikipedia page.
Not a Wikipedia page.
So, our fun fact frequency, our F cubed, is going to be on the floor today. But we're gonna try.
So this is what I'm saying. Hands Across the Sea,
yep,
actually charted higher than I Melt With You.
In the U.S.?
Well, it's the Billboard Hot 100.
The Billboard Hot 100.
See right there? 15. Oh, I'm sorry. That's the UK indie chart.
The indie chart. Hands Across the Sea was at 91 here.
There we are.
Oh, this is very interesting. So I Melt With You comes out in 1982, it charts at 76 on the Hot 100. Then in 1990, the band re-records it for, I believe, a re-release of the record. And it peaks again at 76.
Really?
Yeah. Is that a rule that if you re-release the song, it can't go any higher than it was the first time it came out?
It must be.
This band is interesting to me and odd to me for a number of reasons. Same four members the entire history of the band. I'm always impressed by that.
Really?
Yep, they've been together for like 35 years. They were on 4AD. They released this album on 4AD. They're not cool enough.
Well, right, so then are they? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
This album, this whole genre of music, I find so
dated,
so dull, so
80s.
So 80s.
It's so 80s. I wrote that down, goddamn, like four times. Because it's, did everybody try to make a fucking rock opera?
Well, is that what you think this is?
This is, I wrote the phrase popera a couple times.
Everything's so dramatic.
Everything's so dramatic, which is like, that's theater 101. And a surprising, the first listen through, the big thing that stuck out is like a bunch of weird, unexpected instruments get played.
Yeah.
I found a marimba, a tenor sax, some steel drums, unless I'm crazy. Harriet, stop it. That'll get edited out. All right, track six here, Blue Waves, coming in at 4 minutes. Are these steel drums in the beginning? I'm pretty sure they are. Or is it a synthesizer? Am I my deaf? I might be deaf. You know what?
That's
a synthesizer on a steel drum setting. But this time around, I'm catching some Pac-Man noises, I think. Right there, those little boop. Maybe not. All right, so maybe not. But you know what? I for sure saw a marimba, which, that's the best percussion instrument, hands down, I think.
It's up there for sure.
It's so good. But the problem is that it never fully gets appreciated in these kinds of songs. It's like, and there's a string part in.
Now, was that just Blue Waves that you played?
That was Blue Waves right there.
Now, I can't remember if it's in the eponymous track, Ricochet Days.
Okay.
Or if it's in Heart. I think it's Ricochet Days. There's like an oboe or something. Play that track.
Oh, yeah. No, it's Ricochet Days because, so this is track four, the title track, Ricochet Days.
What is that instrument?
This is, I believe, a clarinet.
You think it's a clarinet?
It's either way, it's a it's a reed instrument for sure.
It sounds like an oboe.
But I'm just gonna shut up for a second and let this play.
I think this is one of the better songs on the album.
This is one of the better songs. It sounds like modern English trying to be bad. My note to the guys trying to be bad would probably be cut the song with the clarinet solo at the top. I don't know.
Kind of foreboding and intense. And then not right here at all.
Yeah, it totally switches. They don't... You know, it's ominous, but I can't, like, kick the feeling that all of these songs should be in, like, an animated movie. And, like, the songs are sung by animals. Like, it's a gang of misfit animals lost in London or something.
Okay, so do you like this album in general?
I thought I did. Because you know what it was? It wasn't Crazy Town, and it wasn't that fucking jerk-off factory from Dexy's Midnight Runners.
Yeah.
So I listened to it the first time, and I go, I think I really like this. I don't think I like it. I think it's just not either of those first two albums. You know?
Sure.
I was able to sit through it and, hell, even enjoy a moment or two here or there.
There were some good moments.
There were some good moments. Overall, I think it's a dated sound that I just cannot get into.
See, I don't like The Cure. And people aren't going to like the fact that I don't like The Cure, but I tell you what, I don't really like The Smiths very much either.
Okay.
Which is huge, I feel like.
Yeah.
But I'm not crazy about The Smiths.
God, you're just trying to start fires today.
Yeah. Yeah. These guys sound like The Cure to me. They sound like The Smiths somewhat. They sound a little bit like Joy Division, like, you know, influence, like post-punk thing, synthesizers. I get it.
This is bad post-punk.
Well, I mean, right, because it's new wave, but that's, has some elements.
That's the thing, is this just middle-of-the-road new wave? Because if it is, then I'm glad I've avoided it up to now.
I can't tell because I also lump The Cars in as new wave.
Aren't they like power pop?
Right, right. But for some reason, I always think maybe it's the name like Gary Newman or Dave. Who am I thinking?
Gary Newman, the guy that sings here in my car.
Yes.
I feel safest of all.
Oh,
that's
shit.
Gary Newman, not The Cars, no. Two different dudes. I always thought that for a while as well, yeah.
Okay. See, the only reason I even think about it is reading about Gloss Drop by Battles.
Okay.
And I think I have juxtaposed those two things in my mind, like, about reading that Gary Newman was a featured vocalist on that album.
Interesting.
Yeah, just a weird...
Yeah, but to get back to this, another thing... is, let's see, I'll put on a song. I want to say something before I play it. Okay, track 3, Spinning Me Round. Before we play this, this is a note I wrote. You could tell me any of these songs were by Tears for Fears or Duran Duran or Culture Club or any of those bands, and I'd probably believe you. Because all those bands are known for their 5 songs, and after that, all of their back catalogs are kind of just thrown into a hat. And maybe one gets played at a party one day, and I'm like, who sings this song? And they don't know, but they're like, I don't know, Duran Duran. And it was Tears for Fears, but it doesn't matter. Like, they're still known for the good songs. But, like, here. This is track 3. Marimba. There's the marimba.
Yeah, there you are.
Again, not a bad song.
See, I like. It's not bad, but it's so. To me, it's so dull.
It's so.
It's like. I don't understand this, like, cheeseball sound.
It's what the country wanted. Everything was so tense over in the USSR. They needed modern English to cut it with a beautiful new wavy knife.
See, in the reed instrument there is a solid choice.
Yeah, this one is, I believe, an alto or tenor saxophone.
Is it? See, now, that gives these songs much-needed texture.
Yes, everything feels very processed.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say even the cool instruments do, because I thought a synthesizer were steel drums. So clearly that was just something they were going for.
Well, it's interesting because sometimes it's the synthesizer, sometimes it's the guitar, sometimes it's these reed instruments. What I think is supremely annoying is the drum machine on
all
every
of it
track.
Yeah.
I hear those, like, I don't know if it's an 808 rim shot or what it is, but that stuff is so
track seven is called Heart. 6 minutes and 58 seconds. Somebody get this decade an editor.
Well, that song starts with strings, which I thought was a nice touch. I liked this song a little bit.
It starts with strings. I was an all-state band in high school, mm-hmm. and the concert master, I believe that's the term. It was this woman, well, I suppose girl, she was like 14. She was a freshman in high school. First chair violin, all-state, blah, blah, blah. But I was talking to her once, and I was curious about, like, what else she had done already, and she said that she had, like, worked on some albums for, like, rock bands that brought in strings and stuff. Like, she was a session musician already.
At the age of 14?
Yeah, which is kind of crazy. She must have had connections. But anyways, she said that those always sucked to do because it's never interesting for them compared to what they're used to playing, you know?
Right. I feel that way, like, that it must be that way a lot of times. String arrangements are very self-serving, I guess.
Yeah.
And in rock and pop albums.
And, like, this
era,
while definitely adding, like you said, some depth and texture necessary for this album, it doesn't seem difficult.
No. And then there's that... Oh, God. That drum machine, I just want to die.
It's so bad.
So you think this is a bad song?
No, I actually wrote down the intro of this song as a highlight.
Yeah, for sure.
But... God, the second he starts singing.
There's never any feeling in his voice. Like, you know, he never strains.
No.
Or changes dynamics, or...
Ooh, you know what? This is the Firestarter. Okay, we just paused it there. This is the Firestarter episode, so I'm just going to dive on in. That's the same problem I have with the guy from The National. I'm sorry.
Oh, but I think his emotion to me is like a controlled thing, whereas I guess I don't feel that way about this.
I supported both the fires you started, and you're kicking me. You're kicking me for mine.
What?
No, it's all good. It's all good. I realize that's a scary thing to say out loud in this music day and age. They don't like the guys from The National's voice.
I mean, if you don't like it, that's fine. Do you like Joy Division? Do you like Ian Curtis?
Not really. I mean, maybe I would. Oh, you're fuming right now. That's not the point of the episode. You know what? We'll do an episode where we just air all our musical bad opinions, because we've all got them. We'll make it a live call-in show. Modern English, another thing I noticed, and you know what? The more I think about it, the more I'm just kind of pointing out negatives of the record. While I don't think they really tried to replicate I Melt With You, you think so?
I don't think they tried to in a... There's a song on here that has some similar sound to it.
What I was going to say is that the worst part about this songwriting on all of this album is that, to me, it seems like you could just sing the melody of I Melt With You over the top of just about all of them.
Yeah. I was doing that earlier to this song that you should play.
Okay, I'm going to play the opener, Rainbow's End. I believe this is the one I'm referring to.
Mm.
It seems like it's... It's close enough.
It starts in a very similar way.
I'll stop the world and melt with you. It's... No.
But it's similar. So the one I was thinking of was Blue Waves.
Blue Waves, okay. So we're going to play the beginning of Blue Waves again, track 6.
Did you...
This is the steel drum one.
Right, so let it go to the hook.
Oh my god, yeah. Oh, totally.
Come on, yeah.
Oh. That's...
Wow. Doesn't that just hit you in the face? I mean, he's using this... correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he uses the same initial pronouns for every bar of that.
Oh. Huh.
I mean, he definitely uses a lot of the same ones.
That's really weird.
It even shares, like, lyrical content, you know, like...
That's crazy.
So I almost wonder, like, how did this occur? Because I think anyone listening hears that, if you point it out.
Yeah.
So how did this occur? Did they attempt to do that? Is that just sort of, like, what came out? And they were like, yeah, it's really close, but, like, fuck it, whatever.
I bet they, like, all recognized it and played dumb. They're like, sounds familiar. I don't think it's anything, though.
Or was it a song that they had before, maybe? And it's been just now released on this album?
Well, in that case, I Melt With You ripped off this.
Right. So
either way.
I'm interested to know.
Or, if we get a little more sinister, maybe they just took the I Melt With You chorus and plucked at it just enough to make it different enough where they're like, there's nothing they can do about it. Like, it's almost as catchy, and it's different enough that we won't get in trouble. So let's use that, you know?
Are you saying, like, with the record company?
No, I don't know, just, like, with the fans. Like, we can fool them this way. We'll just change a little bit of it and send it out again.
Oh, man, that would be a really shitty move.
I don't know.
And I was reading on online a little bit, and one of the guys in the band said that he was opposed to making a, or that the band sort of ideologically was opposed to making a pop record, but then he said something along the lines of he made it, then they finally made one, and it was like the most thrilling thing they'd ever done, so.
Hmm.
That's not the quote, but it's interesting.
But because, this is a pop record, right?
Because this is a pop album, for sure.
So the one before it had to have been, like, what else are these guys if they're not a pop band?
Maybe they were a little darker and more post-punk before, because there are some angular guitar riffs on this album for sure.
Would you say it's impressive or just angular?
Well, I almost want to say I got a Gang of Four type vibe.
Okay.
Which I don't want to say because this band is nothing like Gang of Four.
So like I was saying, overall, I have to say I like this record just because it's not Crazy Town and it's not Dexy's Midnight Runners. In that regard, it wins a bunch of awards for me.
Okay.
And I struggle to fault this band for the flaws that I find in the album because it's not necessarily their fault. This album is a product of the time it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't around for that. You know, like, I think it sounds tacky and processed, but fuck, clearly this is what the nation and the world wanted at that time in history. But then again, there are albums that sound kind of like this that I would consider essential listening. So maybe it's just a product of the time it came out, and also it's just not spectacular.
I mean, what else was going on in 1982?
Musically or in the world?
Right. Well, in the world. But no. I mean musically, first and foremost, but in general. So here's something that I wanted to check. Sonic Youth put out their debut EP 1982. March 1982.
Okay.
So, is that better than this album? I don't know that I can say that.
Did Sonic Youth start out better than the peak of Modern English's career? OneHitWonderfulWorld@gmail.com. That's this week's question.
For sure.
Is Sonic Youth's debut EP better than this Modern English album? I will respond at some point next week on the next episode. I'll listen to the Sonic Youth EP, but that's the thing. We're sticking to this. So yeah, that's what I think. I think I like it because it's not what we've heard so far on the show, and also the parts that I dislike about it are not really their fault.
So, are they a band now, right now? Are they an active band?
They are. They have what looks to be an active, not Indiegogo, or like a GoFundMe for a new album.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah. So,
these guys are touring on this music.
They're touring on this music. I watched a video of them play I Melt With You in the Bing Lounge.
Yeah?
From like 4 or 5 years ago, and they looked so into it.
Well, right on. Good.
Which,
for them.
Another kudos I gotta give. It's probably their 4,000th fucking time playing that song.
Right.
This is unrelated. But you know what? That's starting to happen. We're gonna have little musical tangents here, just so deal with it, everybody. Oasis said from the first show they ever played to the last show they played before they broke up, every single show they played Don't Look Back in Anger. Every single one. Can you imagine that? That's fucking nuts, right?
Yeah, that's...
They've probably played 10,000 shows? No, 5,000 shows. I don't know. Anyways, what were you going
to
say?
I don't know what a useful metric for that is. Or like how to go about guessing.
Did you have a thought about the band?
About Modern English? Well, what I was going to say is that they're touring on this music, and it's
that remains to be seen. They're definitely about to release or have released some tracks off of this new record, but it's coming.
I mean,
Pledge Music, there it is.
When's the last time you think they went on tour? Past couple of years?
Let's look. They're touring.
They're touring.
They just got done touring. Their tour in Boston, their U.S. tour closed on June 7th of this year, so a couple months ago.
But they toured in May here.
Yeah.
In the U.S.
But this was them performing their early material in the following cities. So that was a cash grab, probably to drum up some cash for the new record.
Which the U.K. is just going to chew up, I'm sure.
Which is apparently out. And it looks like, if these italics are not misplaced, the name of the album is the new album.
Oh, gosh. The cover with them standing in those trees is just so evocative.
Yeah. I mean...
Or, yeah. Evocative.
I noticed this guy's got a lot of tattoos. A lot of, like, face tattoos. Very interesting. Like his face is being engulfed by some kind of claw monster.
Hmm, yeah, I noticed that.
So yeah, they're still going. And if that's true, if they are touring their old material to fund making new material, I commend that.
Sure.
To be doing that 30 years in with the original lineup of the band, that's impressive.
That is pretty impressive. Because
despite whether or not I like the music, I respect the fuck out of a band that can last 30 years without switching anybody out.
They have broken up a couple of times.
I did see that.
Yeah. I do want to mention, too, that they recorded this album after they moved from the UK to New York City.
Interesting. So, I wonder...
I think there's still the same producer, though.
I almost wish I would have known that.
Yeah.
Because I know how tacky it sounds when, like, someone's talking about a TV show and they're like, it's almost like New York is a character on the show. Like, it's the five main people, but New York is the sixth character. Like, fuck you, okay? I can watch How I Met Your Mother without your input. But, that being said, on albums And maybe it's a thing that I just make up in my own head. If I know that it was recorded after a move to New York, I can almost kind of tell a little bit.
So, do you think you hear that here now, retroactively? Well,
I don't know if I can. And I'll never know because I'm probably not going to listen to this record again.
Well, and then that's the question that I was going to ask you. So, you know, not just would you recommend this to other people? Would you recommend this to other people?
No.
You wouldn't say to anybody, oh, go ahead and listen to this Modern English album.
I mean, if someone told me that they were going to listen to it, I wouldn't try and stop them.
Do you think this is, like, a good album by any type of documentable objective measure?
I get the feel, I don't think so. Not by any, like, provable written down means.
I don't even know what that means, quite honestly.
But I get the feeling that it was a good album in the 80s. Yeah. Because it's got some instrumentation, some things that people probably weren't used to hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And
we were ripping on the string arrangements earlier, but it's not that it's not too simple.
No, you know? No, I'm harsh on everything. I don't know, like, let's see here. What else did I have for Spinning Me Around, we already played. Yeah, like here, this chapter 12. Some more strings. It's not bad. It gets a little new agey. Kind of. But that being said, little staccato part there, that's cool. I get the feeling that maybe it had some flourishes that were unexpected at the time it came out. So I think people were probably, like, surprised by it. All the reviews on Amazon are pretty great.
Yeah.
And those are, like, the people buying, if I may speculate blindly, I would say the people buying the CD of Ricochet Days by Modern English on Amazon are probably the people that were young when it came out.
That sounds accurate. See, now I almost, I'm having some mixed feelings because I think I might say to other people, like, you should listen to this.
Okay.
Because to me, it's kind of unique because it has those Cure-type vibes, Duran Duran-type vibes, but it's got something extra, I think, that's maybe worth checking out.
Okay.
Now this is the question then that I'm not sure that you answered earlier. Would you ever listen to it again? No, you said no. You said you'd never listen to it again.
I don't think I would. I wouldn't tell somebody to turn it off if it came on. But here's what I think. It's not that it's bad. It's just that I don't think it gives anything to the modern music listener that another album in a similar genre by a similar artist can't do. What, I don't know.
The music's done better by other people.
Yeah, but that is kind of the thing we've been saying.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's fair anymore. It's not that it's done better. It's just done more in a way that it feels more timeless. This feels dated.
For sure. I think
And I can't think of any specific examples, but I know there are albums that are, like, new wavy and have this 80s sound, but have lasted the test of time better than this has.
Right. Well, this was lost to the sands, I would say.
Yeah.
Maybe not in the UK, but I don't know. I don't recognize any of the songs in that album. I might vaguely recognize Hands Across the Sea.
I think that's just, like, psychosomatic, though. We see that it's the other hit on YouTube, and we're like, oh, I've got to know it.
Right. Yeah, maybe you're right. But I think if anyone was to say to me, like, I like these other bands, and, like, I like this type of music, I might say to them, like,
oh
check out Ricochet Days by Modern English. I could definitely see myself saying that.
Okay, yeah.
Now,
if someone gave me the in of, like, nudging me and being like, I dig New Wave, then sure, because I've at least heard it.
Would I ever listen to it again? Probably not. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to personally listen to it again.
It is just
because I'm compiling quite the list in my Apple Music queue of my music or whatever. It's
Just of things for the show?
Well, right. So the Dexys Midnight Runners is clogging up the works, and then I got Crazy Town in this thing. And, like, I haven't been able to bring myself to remove it from my music
yet. So you're a digital hoarder? You never know?
I like being reminded, kind of when I'm scrolling through, like, oh, yeah, that's a thing.
That's a thing I did. I guess that's really... all I have to say, I don't know. It was harder to find things to talk about for this one. It didn't, like, viscerally hit me the way those first two did. Because Dexys Midnight Runners was a combination of it being, like, out there and bad, but also just an eagerness of, like, doing the show for the first time.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Crazy Town, monumentally horrible.
Really, really, really bad.
Really bad. This, it's just that same kind of, like, blasé feeling I get when I listen to an album, and I'm like, that was fine, but it doesn't pull anything out of me, good or bad. Like, I had to search a little bit more and think a little bit harder to figure out things that I was inspired to talk about, you know?
Really? Yeah, I mean, I had just a visceral reaction to the genre in general, and I think what that is indicating to me is that maybe I don't know enough about New Wave to really talk about it.
There's no way that I do. I wasn't even sure if this was New Wave until I saw the Wikipedia page tags.
Sure. Do you appreciate the orchestration at all? Or, like, is there anything that stands out to you as a positive?
I mean, they write some good melodies. They have pretty good choruses for the most part. There are some interesting instruments that came in three or four of the tracks. But, I mean, yeah, yes, there are things that are good about it. I mean, it's not a bad album. It's just, to me, it's just good. So, would you listen to it again? No.
No.
Would you recommend it to other people? Yes. Given that they...
If I heard that someone already liked music like this, I would say check this one out.
Okay. I agree with both of those. I'm not going to listen to it again. But if someone told me they liked A Flock of Seagulls, I'd be like, I bet you'll fucking love this.
Yes. Do you like Tears for Fears, like Mad World? Do you like that song?
I like Mad World. I like their big hits. Like Everybody Wants to Rule the World to me is an
awesome
song. And I'm Out With You are both ways to do that sound and have it last for 30 years.
Yeah.
So Modern English proved they can do it.
I mean, the fact that they're still around is enough. Like, where are Dexys Midnight Runners? And, like, we know where Crazy Town is.
Yeah, that's true. It is really impressive that they have been around for as long as they have with the same people, and they're still choosing to make this a career. And I think that matters more than the fact that I think this album is dated. My thoughts on the specific album are different from my thoughts on the band, because that was my gut instinct is, oh, they're still doing this, actively creating new things? That's awesome.
Right. Because, and I remember your optimism about this album.
Yeah. So it's not something I listen to all the time. It's miles better than the first two things we've listened to. It's a lot better than a lot of things that I encounter musically on any given day, because it seems like this was written by people that knew how to do this sound well. And it's just a matter of fact that I don't really dig this sound all too much. And that, it just is a difference. That's what it boils down to. So that's where I'm at if we're going to do a final thoughts type thing on the record. Kyle, anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
I mean, I agree with those points pretty much exactly. What I do want to ask is, like, if you had to pick three songs from this album as songs that you liked or songs that are the three best songs, what would you pick?
Probably the title track, Ricochet Days.
Mm-hmm.
Spinning Me Round.
Okay.
And then the closer, Breaking Away.
Oh, the closer? You like that?
I did, yeah. It was short.
It's the shortest song on the album.
That's when I can take... Well, of course it was. That's when I can take, like, new wave type stuff.
When it's...
In those, like, shorter bursts.
Yeah.
I see 658 on an album that sounds like this, and I get a little worried.
Absolutely. Well, if I'm going to answer the same question, I would definitely say Ricochet Days.
Yeah.
I do like Hands Across the Sea, and I like Blue Waves, the one that sounded...
So you love the middle of this record, then?
Well, right. Three tracks in a row.
Four, five, and six.
Four, five, and six.
Hands Across the Sea and Blue Waves are both higher points, for sure.
Yeah. It's interesting that I would like the middle, because... What do you think? If you had to guess, do you think that would be, like, side two of the first record, or do you think that would be still on the first side,
those two songs? I mean, it's probably... If it's just a two-sided thing, I'd say those are the closers of side A.
Right. Well, because normally you like the beginnings, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone likes the beginning and the end. And it's probably having to do with memory, because they say that about memory, too, right?
Sure.
Remember the beginning and the end of a book. Yeah, I don't know. I sort of lost track, honestly, after Blue Waves.
Yeah.
And I listened to
the second half. The second half of my second listen, I was starting to tune out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It started to feel like a chore.
Yeah.
But overall, I think the band in general and the strength of the one song and the strength of elements of this album and maybe the rest of their career, who knows? That alone gets them a pass from me.
Right on. All right, so Cody, what are we doing next week?
So next week we are going to be hanging out with our good friend MJ Marsh, a local comedian, improviser, bartender extraordinaire in Minneapolis. And we're going to be talking about the guys that sing Bittersweet Symphony. So The Verve is the focus next week. Anything else we need to cover before we get out of here? onehitwonderfulworld@gmail.com. Still haven't gotten an email. I feel like I've brought it up a handful of times.
Not a single one.
Not a single one yet. Maybe I just am checking the wrong folder. Again.
Yeah, dude.
Sonic Youth's first EP versus the Modern English album. That'll be a point of discussion next week. And, yeah, thank you all for listening. We're going to close out with the closer off of Ricochet Days by Modern English. This is Breaking Away from Kyle and I. Good night.